Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM, Moscow Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latah Recovery Center, which is located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addictions and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And the May calendar is out. For the Latah Recovery Center, I suggest you go to the latahrecoverycenter.org website. You can find all the offerings there. Your new, introduction to change?
Yeah, so invitation to change is supposed to start tomorrow, but we don't have any people signed up. And so if we don't have anybody who signs up tomorrow, then we will extend that time to maybe a month from now or something to try to get more outreach to people so that they know. But in talking about that, the Invitation to Change group is a family support group for people who have family or friends that struggle with substance use. And we have a workbook that we go through. It's a 15-week-long class, and we meet on Wednesdays from 5:30 to 6:45. So it's an hour and 15 minutes. And we go over these lessons, and I find it very supportive and a great safe space to be able to learn how to interact better with that person or people in my life who struggle in that area. And I think it's really nice in the sense of a group coming together to be able to share as we go through just some of the hard things. And I don't know, I think over this last few months that I took that with other people and with Sean, that I don't know, I feel like there's a little bit more of a softer side to the situation, and that I'm kind of seeing things a little different and not quite so affected by the choices of other people, you know, that are still struggling, that are in my family. And I think that the tools that they have in the 15-week-long workbook structure have actually been really helpful. So even as a person who's been in recovery for 11 years and on a pretty good path, I think that this has been really helpful information. And like I said, I really appreciate the space to have a little time to share different kinds of things and good things too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I absolutely. You know, in an AA setting where I hang out a lot, hearing people talking about their struggles with family before and after getting into recovery, it can be interesting. It can be enlightening. You know, I can learn some stuff from it because there may be things going on in my situation that I'm not really aware of either.
Right.
So, yeah.
And I just want to lastly just say that there were people that were attending this last time that are not people who struggle with addiction. And so it doesn't matter if you yourself struggle with addiction or not. This is about supporting family and friends who struggle.
Right, right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's probably structured more towards that.
Yeah.
Towards
it's
that
both.
End.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Sure, sure. Okay. So that's a calendar update for you all. And today on our show, Denise and I are going to talk about relapse. And relapse in addiction, you know, it's a common occurrence. The rates range from 40 to 60% in the first year. But it's considered a natural part of the recovery process, not necessarily a failure. And it can occur due to various factors, stress, triggers, exposure to people or places associated with, like, past use. Like, I know a lot of people who, like, their whole social structure before they got into recovery was centered around a bar or pub. And they go back to those places while they're in recovery because of the social structure. And although they find it, you know, may find it uncomfortable or whatever, there's an old saying at AA is if you hang out in a barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. So, there's a reason why a lot of people stress that you got to change your playmates and your sandbox.
Yeah.
It's helpful. And it can also be a sign of a need for different or more frequent treatment. That's, you know, really part of it in a nutshell. But I'll read the technical meaning. A relapse implies a deterioration in health or behavior after a period of improvement. So that can apply to health. You have cancer, you go into remission, mm-hmm. and then you have a relapse, you know, flares up again.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, dealing with substances or alcohol or nail biting or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Or behaviors, yeah.
Yeah, it can be a reoccurrence of symptoms of a disease, such as returning to nail biting, oddly enough, after having stopped. And in addiction, relapse is a return, of course, to substance after a period of non-use. And that's the technical meaning of it. But the interesting thing to me about relapse is the state of mind and body before that happens. In your brain, chemically, once you stop introducing a substance, those receptors have built a whole army of other receptors for that pleasure signal that's up there and being fed to it in copious quantities through a drug or through alcohol ingestion. And when you stop feeding them, they get irritated and they get agitated and they start demanding that you keep going, you know, keep giving them what they need. And it's a chemical reaction in your brain. So people become uncomfortable, you know, nervous, anxious. There's a whole,
whole ton angry, of, all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
All sorts of
dysregulated,
right. Physical things that go along with it. But that does calm down after a while, after they get used to the idea that no more candy for you. Mm-hmm. They do get used to it. And that kind of slacks off a bit. But, you know, there's the part of the mind that has been trained to react to everything in, you know, with substances as a tool.
To make you feel better again, make you feel normal again.
Right. Yeah. Right. And it can be everything from a broken shoelace to, you know, a death in the family. There's a whole lot of things that can drive that relapse. But I found, and Denise and I were talking about it, that relapse typically doesn't just occur like a stroke of lightning. I'm going to go buy a bottle of whiskey and drink it right now. Mm-hmm. It's not that thought that drives the relapse. It's the thinking, it's the environment, just the things going on around you that make you start thinking crazy. An example for me early on in recovery, I relapsed several times, or lapsed. They weren't very long and they were miserable. Physically, in early recovery, you start feeling better. I mean, your body starts getting healthy again. The fog clears in your head. Suddenly, you know, you have other things in life that you're doing that you wouldn't have done, you know, under the influence, because I don't know about anyone else, but I spent all my time organizing my life around my next drink, and it was exhausting, but that's what I did. But later on down the road, you know, after you've been sober for maybe a couple of months or so, there's also this thing we call in AA the pink cloud. You're feeling so much better, and things are going so much typically better in your life because you're repairing problems. You're not doing the behavior that drove your loved ones crazy. You don't have to drive with one eye in the rearview mirror looking for the cop. So suddenly the idea starts creeping in that, well, maybe I'm not really an alcoholic. Maybe, you know, I could have maybe one drink, you know, at a certain time, but just one, and see how it goes. And then, oh no, I can't, you know, I shouldn't do that. You know, I'm not drinking this. And over time, that thought keeps recurring and recurring. And that's the mental mindset. And then you break your shoelace one morning. It's like, damn it. What the heck? Okay, screw it. Tonight I'm going to have a drink. And you're thinking about it. And for me, it's like all day thinking about, oh, I'm going to have a beer when I get home, or I'm going to buy a bottle and have a couple of shots, and I'll be fine. And once the alcohol hits my system, it's like all bets are off. I can never in my life remember having one drink. Well, maybe I did, but I wasn't happy about it.
It wasn't by your choice.
No. So, you know, that one drink, maybe that first time, one drink, you know, the calm that comes with it, and you know, that warm, fuzzy feeling, and everything's cool. And then the next day is like, well, I had a drink. I just had one drink, and now I'm okay. And I feel okay. I don't have a hangover, you know, and I got that nice relief that I want. So the next night, maybe it's two drinks. And that's the way it was for me until like the fourth day, when I was literally back up to, I could drink an entire bottle, and waking up in the morning feeling horrible, going through all that stuff that I went through before. And if you're lucky like I was, you realize, okay, they said in the AA big book, go try some controlled drinking and see how it works. Well, that's what I did. And I found out there is no real control for me. The only control is putting the plug in the jug, mm-hmm. and doing my AA thing. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know, you were in a pretty strict program where that first couple of years was not going to be an issue.
So, for me, there's kind of a difference between the ability to get the substances that I did. And so, I will say this, in my program, because I did the Latah County Drug Court Program for 2 years, we weren't allowed to drink during that 2 years, and I think that was good. But I got to tell you, if that would have been my drug of choice, that would have really been hard, because it's at the grocery store. So in that, going to like NA, and I hit up some AA as well, because in the beginning I needed to do 90 and 90. Mm-hmm. So went to AA. And it was kind of good, because I have family members who struggled with alcohol, and they were more like grandparents, I think, on my dad's side of the family. So I wasn't really around them. But in having that more of an understanding of thinking about this, like, oh my gosh, it's at the grocery store. Like, that's rough, you know? So what it makes me think of, though, is I had quit smoking for probably about just under a year, and something really, really life-changing and earth-shaking happened. And I was going to the store to get my cigarettes. I mean, that was it. I was just like, I need to go buy cigarettes. And I just went in, bought cigarettes, and I did. I continued to smoke for quite some time. And then I was able to quit smoking 6 years ago. But that like urgency, like I'm getting in the car and I'm driving to the store right now. Like, I could not control how not okay I was, you know? Right. So it's a little different for me, because I don't really talk to those people anymore. I wouldn't really know where to get the things that I used to do.
Right.
Which is really good for me. So, yeah. So it's been pretty good. This last 11 years has been really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like you said, you had that very structured program.
I did. And I made all new friends and like started learning how to do things that were fun. Mm-hmm. Without any of that. And it was, I mean, you know, most days in the beginning I was getting a UA. There really wasn't a lot of choice in that. I know for sure without the accountability, it would not have went that way. Mm-hmm. Like, I needed to have that structured. Like, if you fail UAs and you don't pass this program, you're going to go to jail. Like, that just to me was like, I'm going to get through this no matter what.
Right.
So,
Right. Yeah. That reward they offered you was significant enough.
Right.
You know, there are examples in the Big Book about, and they even talk about, you know, there are some people that have, if they have a significant reason, an important enough reason to stop, they can do it.
Right.
And like you said, you know, you may have some familial addiction back there somewhere. And, you know, I find that people, most of the alcoholics I know, have some sort of alcoholism in their family tree somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
Even if they don't, they might have, you know, some sort of addictive behavior going on there.
And I did want to say that it was hard getting through the hard moments. Like, it took time to figure out how to navigate things. And that's not to say that I didn't go and do some therapy shopping or, you know, these kinds of things that we're able to do that aren't illegal, you know?
Right.
So there were those kinds of things, you know, kind of using them as coping and stuff like that, that happened. And so I've had to look at that in my recovery and be like, okay, you need to have a budget. You need to not overspend, and just these different kinds of things, trying to live in those values. And that's not to say that I don't get on Amazon and sometimes buy something to make myself feel better. And so, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different things that would be considered relapsing or lapsing. So for me, I'm trying not to, like, it's a lot about living in my values and treating people the way that I think people should be treated, the way I would want to be treated.
Right.
So if I'm raising my voice or if I'm being unkind to somebody, I need to circle back around as quick as I can, and I need to go apologize, because that kind of tension isn't good for me, because I don't know where that's going to lead to. Like,
right,
having resentments and having broken relationships, it's just not good. And I don't know what it could lead to, you know?
Right. It's like the lies I used to tell.
Yeah.
You know, in my addiction, it's exhausting trying to keep track of it.
Right.
And when the lies are found out, which typically almost always are, you know, then the pain and the discomfort that comes with that would push me even deeper into the bottle, because I didn't want to feel that.
It's hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to feel okay and you want to feel normal. And so, right, I think that, like, continuing to keep an eye on these things, because it could lead back to something like that. I don't want to go pick up that habit of smoking cigarettes again, you know?
Mm.
I smoked cigarettes for like 31, 32 years,
mm,
and I finally was able to set it down 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So kind of needing to work on that, because I remember my son said a handful of years ago when I got into recovery in the beginning, and he said, you know, Mom, if you get lung cancer, like, you can't get better from that. And I'm just like, oh, right. You know? And between that and then my daughter saying, you know, Mom, if you quit smoking, and I was like, oh, she's got nothing. I'll go to church. And I was like, oh, a week and a half later, I quit smoking this last time for 6 years. So I love it that my kiddos and my family are smart like that. You know, that was really cool. Yeah. And that's where working really hard early in recovery and throughout my recovery on my relationships with people has been so important, because, I mean, if you can have close family and friends, it is really, really helpful, you know, making new friends that you're not going to wind up being around things that you shouldn't be around or aren't good for you. So important.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. And that's, for me, that's where the, you know, the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous comes in.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the things, I do socially, if they're not with my wife and, you know, people she is associated with for years,
yeah,
it's with my fellows from AA. We go out, we play golf.
Mm-hmm.
My idea of camping anymore is like a cheap motel, you know, that's camping. But they do camping trips, you know, all summer in this area. There's always a camp out going on.
Yeah, it's
got to
be like in a cabin or a yurt. That's where I'm at our age. I feel like that's fair. There's
right.
No more tent camping for me anyways. Yeah.
Right. And there are some that are my age that, you know, that's been their thing their whole lives. So, you know, I'm a little too wimpy to want to sleep on the hard ground anymore. I spent a lot of money on a really soft, fluffy bed, and
yeah.
You know, I appreciate a motel with a good bed. That's how I rate it. It can have cockroaches, but if the bed's fine.
It's also so hard to pack up all that stuff. I think that my energy level and now working full time, I'm just like, do I really want to bring my entire house out to the wilderness? I mean, I know some people just absolutely dig that. And I think I did for the first 20 years that I lived here. But now I'm just like, I have great memories.
Yeah.
I'm good. My teenagers probably disagree with that. They don't like it, but we go rent a yurt.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The funny story about that, taking the whole house with you.
Yeah.
We brought a friend of ours who had never gone camping with us up to this really remote campsite. I mean, it's 15 to 20 miles down this crap ass road, anyway, down into this river canyon. It's a gorgeous spot, and the fishing is great, and there's not a lot of people go down there, so you can really enjoy the peace and quiet and the nature. And in the morning, we got up, and you clean up in the river. That's where the water is.
Right.
And so she wet her hair down, and she went over to her little travel bag that she brought with her and pulled out a hairdryer.
Yes.
And said, where can I plug this in? I'm like, 20 miles up that road, there's a grocery store.
Yeah.
They probably let you use it, but I'm not driving up there.
Hair tie, ponytail.
Yeah, yeah, ponytail, mm-hmm. hair tie. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it was kind of funny. You know, there's people that do it all the time, and then there's me. Although I must admit, this July I'm going to be going down to California, and the friend I'm staying with says, "Hey, I said, let's, why don't we go do some fishing while I'm down there? I'll take a couple extra days. We're going down for something else." And he's like, "Oh yeah, I'll borrow so and so's cot, and we'll go up to Shasta and camp out for a couple of days and fish." And I went, "Yeah, that sounds great." And then afterwards, I'm like, "Oh, wait a minute.
What did I just do?
He's going to be sleeping outdoors." But in July, near Mount
Shasta, better bring an air mattress.
It's going to be
nice. Oh my goodness, mattress.
It'll be fine. I can withstand two nights on a cot. I'll make it through on that one.
That's fair.
But yeah, so I mean, there's those sort of things to do. Like last night or Monday night, Cinco de Mayo, one of the groups threw a Cinco de Mayo party, taco bar, speaker meeting thing. And so we combined with another meeting that's here in town to use their space on their appointed day to use the space. We use the same space on Friday night. Mm-hmm. But it was great. It was so much fun. We didn't know how many people to expect, so we ordered food for like 30 people. And I think about 45 showed
That's
up.
Awesome.
It was packed.
Nice.
It was really
Where
amazing.
Was that at?
It was up at St. Mark's Church.
Cool. That's
they
awesome.
They have a parish hall downstairs and back
nice.
Off the alley, a typical AA meeting place. If you're ever in a strange town and
right.
you don't know where the AA meeting is, drive around the back of hospitals and churches and look for people drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
That chances 9 out of 10, you found the spot.
Yep.
So anyway, but I, it's staying in the middle of the herd is what a lot of people say mm-hmm. that will help defeat that mindset that
yeah.
precedes the relapse. But, alcohol in the book, it describes it as cunning, baffling, and powerful. And I think it's the same for yeah. substances.
Yeah, it is.
And, I don't have to spend my time anymore in a state of heightened awareness, mm-hmm. but I can't stop doing the things I know I should do for any length of time mm-hmm. before a thought will occur to me out of nowhere. Like, it's a sunny day. Wow, beer would be good. What? 30 years later?
Yeah.
Really? A beer would be good?
Do you ever tell yourself, I tell myself, no, Denise, we don't do that anymore. That's what I tell myself. I literally say that. No, Denise, we don't do that anymore. Like, if I think about having a cigarette, I'm like, oh, no, Denise, we don't do that anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
No, for me, it just kind of, the thought hits me, and it's just very subtle, just a little quick thought running mm-hmm. through, and it's like, I'll stop, and it's just like, well, that's ridiculous.
Right.
Where did that come from?
Well, probably because in your brain, you still have memories of doing those things. So
there were
even though we try to shove them in the closet
right.
and be like, nope, do not enter.
Well, the thing is,
we don't do that anymore.
at one point, there were good times.
Oh, yeah, for me too. Absolutely.
Yeah, there were good times where you know, having a beer, getting drunk with a bunch of friends and doing crazy stuff, you know, it was a good time. Unfortunately, by the time my drinking career ended, it was no longer a good time, at all.
Yeah, I was overboard too.
And for me, part of my regimen, my daily regimen for sobriety is when I get up in the morning, I read my book and I intentionally put my big book under my bed. So when I get up, I have to get down on my knees to get my book. Mm-hmm.
How are your knees doing? You still good? Because, I mean, we both have back issues.
Right.
My knees are still good.
Well, fortunately, I got the bed I can lean
on.
Oh,
okay.
But while I'm down on my knees, it's like, well, may as well ask God to keep me sober today and to help me do the next right thing according to whatever His will is, which I don't know. And, you know, then I get up and I do a little reading, some meditation. And, you know, as funny as I find when I go on vacation, although I always have my book somewhere nearby, you know, I don't necessarily practice that habit because I don't typically have the time in the morning to do that sort
That's
of
fair.
Thing. But, you know, it doesn't take me long. Say I'm in the bathroom taking care of God's work to go, oh, you know, thank you, Lord, for this powerful bowel movement and keep me safe today, you know.
Right.
I mean, it can be done.
It can
be done.
Okay.
But, you know, if I were to, you know, go and travel for a month and not do my regular routine or something akin to it for that time and come back, I might not start doing it habitually again. Mm-hmm. And there have been times like that. And it gets to a point where I start getting edgy, getting uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I call it getting squirrely. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying things and doing things. And it's like, why did I?
I can totally relate.
Why did I snap about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, you know, why do I think this is just stupid? I don't know why I'm here when it's something, you know, like I signed up for. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized that I'm losing my connection with my higher power, God. And that's when those thoughts of like, oh, having a drink would probably be okay, start creeping in.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be going on for my 70th birthday. I'm going to take a cruise up to Alaska with a couple of friends. And those boats are floating bars.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
You're out at sea. There's no 2 o'clock closing time. I mean, if you want to party 24/7,
yeah.
you know, get on the boat. You know, buy that $200 liquor pass, and
I mean, you could get an umbrella with your not alcoholic drink and throw some fruit on it and make it look all pretty. I mean, I would.
Yeah.
I'm not going to turn down an umbrella.
Right. A little paper umbrella.
Yeah.
Just make
Mean, honestly, so like the place down here that's the Mexican food place,
yeah.
I really like their virgin strawberry daiquiri. So they go put liquor in them. It doesn't taste as good anymore. So
yeah.
That's where I'm landing on that stuff.
Yeah. Well,
I just like sugar.
Liquor tastes foul. I mean,
oh
it's awful. And that's why they came up with drinks like margaritas and
daiquiris. To make them not be so bad, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, but I actually, you know, I developed a taste for the foul. Although I admit, you know, I still cringed at the end every time I drank some like cheap vodka.
That's
you know,
fair.
Just choke it down, you know, guzzle a few ounces and, you know, you're okay. But mm-hmm. yeah, no, and, you know, those fruity frou-frou drinks, they're fine. You know, I look at, it was funny, we had a friend who likes the Crown Royal whiskey, and they've come out with flavored Crown Royal whiskey.
Yeah.
You know, strawberry, or what is it, blackberry, I think think it's peach, apple. And it's funny because I talked to a friend who's a normal, moderate drinker, and he likes good bourbon and good scotch. And he's like, that's not Crown Royal.
Right.
I don't know what it is, but it's not
Crown Royal. Yeah, it's like how they take the vape and they put all the flavors in it and everything like that.
Right.
Maybe you should just smoke a regular cigarette. I don't know about that other stuff.
And thanks. I remember when my wife was, working in retail and her friends would come over and most of them were younger. They're always drinking this horrible sweet liquor. And so it's like they're marketing it towards that, the new up and coming alcoholic.
That's right there. That's yeah. Right.
Let's give you some soda. Well, and when I was a kid, Boone's Farm apple wine.
$2.17 a bottle.
Yeah, exactly. And we'd get a bottle of Boone's Farm each and a six pack of something called Buckhorn beer, which.
I don't like beer.
Not great, but, it would do the trick. You'd make a day out of that.
Cannot drink beer. Never been able to drink beer, so.
But, yeah, so, and they called it soda pop wine. And yeah. That was, and we were the target market, the young underage drinker. So, anyway, but.
Yeah.
So, back to relapse, it's that time when everything seems okay. That the thoughts tend to invade. I've gone through a series of people passing recently. My eldest sister in January, and then a good friend of mine in the program lost his 6-year-old son, and then our friend over in Seattle passed away really unexpectedly. And, people are like, people that care about me that, aren't part of the fellowship, like, doesn't that make you want to drink? And I'm like, no, it really makes me not want to drink, because if I can rationalize something like that happening equals I deserve a drink, I'm in big trouble. Mm-hmm. I'm in big trouble because... It's like my friend who lost his child. He goes, I don't know. He said this in the meeting. I don't know why God got me sober to let this happen. And I pulled him aside after the meeting and I said, buddy, God got you sober
so you could
exactly so that you could deal with this.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not your world to figure out. It's, your higher power's world to run. You just need to live in it in the same way. And although I don't think it quelled his, anger at that point, but I've seen him soften towards that.
Yeah.
Given just not really very long time, just a few weeks. Yeah. And he seems to be doing much better, He didn't give up. He didn't have to drink. That's cool. Good.
Yeah, that is. I mean, it's a broken world. Our bodies have all sorts of problems, and there's disease and everything like that. And I think of God being there with me as I'm walking through all these hard things that are just a part of the fact that we're in a broken world,
Yeah.
Yeah, it's taken me a little while to understand that more, being my belief and everything like that, because I used to just be like, oh, my goodness, how do you let this be? But again, broken world. Now that I understand things a little better, that helps. Yeah.
Right.
But that's like one of the worst,
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. And I kind of look at it, I guess, a little weird maybe compared to other people. But, when someone passes, if they're a true believer or not, whatever situation they were in this physical body is over. And I'm just pissing and moaning about the fact that I don't get to play with them anymore.
Right. I mean, funerals are for the people who are left behind.
Right. Exactly.
We're there to support each other. Yeah.
Right. Support each other, acknowledge, the person's existence and contributions, whatever. And and we lost another fellow, last Friday, He was about 8-9 years sober. He was a significant person in this community.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, some people will say, well, you know, the atheists will say, well, there is no God. You know, how can these things happen? You know, that it would mean that God is evil. And I'm like, no, God isn't evil. Evil is the lack of God. If you don't have a concept of, you know, something greater than yourself in your life, and if it's just all about you, I don't know a whole ton of people that are genuinely happy.
Yeah.
You know, living in that scenario. I mean, they may look happy. They may have a ton of money. They may have a yacht, or something, you know. But it's like, you know, some very famous people. One I always remember is W.C. Fields, who was an old-timey comedian and actor, and was an avowed atheist. And when he was dying, a friend came to visit him, and he was in bed. And he was reading the Bible, and his friend said, "Bill, what's going on? You're an atheist. Why are you reading the Bible?" He said, "I'm looking for loopholes."
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe it comes later, maybe it doesn't. And a lot of the atheistic people I know don't seem real happy. So, I mean, maybe that's just my luck. I'm sure there's several hundred atheists out there listening to this right now, screaming at the radio, and this guy didn't know what he's talking about.
But that's okay. We're totally okay with whatever your belief is. It's okay.
That's right, or non-belief.
Exactly.
Just fine with that. Yeah. Just run with it. Do what you can, and I'm good with that. So, kind of rolling back to relapse. So it's not always sitting with people, you know, like I do all the time. I'll go out with people for dinner, and people have cocktails before dinner. Mm-hmm. Diet Coke's good for me, you know. And then I can be downright popular when a bunch of people are together drinking heavily because I can drive.
Absolutely. And let me tell you what, when you're the sober person watching all the drunk people, that is an interesting thing. And you're very happy that you're the sober person.
Yes.
Because while they may not remember the silly things that they said or did or the ridiculousness of it, you do, and you know that you didn't do that. And so sometimes I'm almost embarrassed for other people.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and then you have tools to use against them too.
Maybe.
Oh, man.
But I mean, I definitely know that, you know, I did all those things that were embarrassing and all that too. So, anyways.
Well, there's a great
joke. Just saying.
There's a great joke that goes with that. I'll bore you with it. I probably told you before. This fella comes into a bar on a Sunday morning, pretty obviously hungover, and he looks at the bartender and he says, "Were you working last night?" And he says, "Yeah, I was." And he says, "Was I in here?" "Oh, buddy, yeah, you were in here." He says, "Was I like buying rounds of drinks for everybody and having it?" "Oh, yeah, pal, you sure did. You were the life of the party." He said, "Did I spend like $500? And the bartender says, "Yep, every penny of it." And the guy goes, "Oh, thank God, I thought I lost it."
Oh, no. No, I don't think I've heard you say that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought I lost it.
Thought I lost it.
Yeah. As long as it went to a good cause, I'm okay.
Yeah.
So, having said all that about relapse, you know, my advice to anybody who's fighting, you know, a condition or an addiction, the best thing to do is, you know, like it says there, you know, maybe you need some more help or some different help or a different path to get on, because one size does not fit all. I've known people who have gone to AA and it just didn't seem enough for them, and they found another path, you know, through religion or through, you know, working with a psychologist, whatever, to, you know, find out what it is in them that needs adjustment to be able to, you know, live life without substances. And really, for me, sobriety is all about living life on life's terms.
Yeah, it's a journey.
Yeah, and life's terms are not always good terms. You know, people die. Cars blow up. You fall down and break your hip. There's all sorts of things that life can throw at you that are, you know, beyond your control and, you know, beyond your ability to make things better. And so for me, I got to remember that I spent 40 years with a default substance that made things better, or at least they seemed better at the time. And, you know, I'm 30 years sober. If I make another 10 years, I'll be sober as long as I was drinking. Well, maybe I am now.
Did you get into really recovery when you were like 40?
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah. So, you know, that'd be great. But I don't think let me put it this way. There's going to be something that happens that's like a trigger that I haven't encountered in sobriety up until now that may test that. Mm-hmm. It either might seem so horrible, or actually usually it might seem so innocuous. You know, just something, some little thing like we're going to toast to the dearly departed or something like that, where my brain might, just for a second, if I'm not staying close to my God, is going to go, well, this will be okay. Now, if it does happen, I hope I realize quickly what kind of mistake I've made, and I do what I can to snap out of that. So, hey, speaking of snapping out of it, we got to snap out of here. We're all done. We're up against the clock here, Miss Denise.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you so much for sitting in.
Mm-hmm, my pleasure.
And we'll get together, and actually, next week, we're going to have a radio replay because I will be in Nashville.
That sounds good.
Listening to good music and not drinking. But I'll be with a bunch of people. I'll probably be driving the van quite a bit.
There you go. You're going to be the DD.
Yeah, I'm going to be the double D, the designated decoy. No, that's not it. Something else.
You're going to have a great time.
Yes, yes, I'm planning on it. So I'm going to close it out with the usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with alcohol or other substances or maybe a little behavioral health problem, you do.